Yeah, that's a good segue into moving on to the Rockies. We only made the one move, which was perhaps a little bit of a surprise. I think, after the Jimenez trade was announced yesterday, we, at least I personally felt we were probably going to be getting, maybe one or two more trades done today. Some combination of Wigginton, Betancourt, maybe Stewart, and so on and so forth. But, although apparently we came as, at least so far as to get into serious discussions for Ian Stewart, nothing ever materialized. And, we ended up with just the one move. So, last week, and obviously a lot can change in a week, you said that the odds of Jimenez, getting moved were probably about 5% at the time. That obviously went up as the week went on. So I'm wondering what you wrote a really long post about, why the Rockies made this trade when they did. And, your own personal thoughts. I mean, I don't want to make you reiterate everything too much or sound too redundant, but I do want to hear, what your thoughts are, regarding, those particulars, in the sense that was this the right trade? And, I mean, it's obviously too early to know if the trade will be a success or not, but I know that you felt that maybe you would have wanted to, get a little bit more back.
Well, it's really a tricky thing. When you have a guy like Ubaldo Jimenez, who everyone is so sentimentally attached to, there's other guys that know that people never got sentimentally attached to, and then some people just get sentimentally attached to everybody who puts on a Rockies uniform, even if it's, you know, just for a day or two, and they get sent back down and never come back up again. You know, there's the Alan Johnson fan club and all that. But with a guy like Ubaldo, who just... he loved Denver. He'd go and pitch a start and then the next day run 6-7 miles at Wash Park. And, you know, everyone likes him, and his family lived right across the street from the ballpark with him. And, you know, he's just this guy that everyone, you know, was happy to have. He threw 100 miles an hour and just did magic with a baseball that you've never seen before, never mind out of the hand of a Rockies pitcher. And now he's gone. It's, I don't know, it's just kind of a weird feeling to think that he was, well, I always viewed him as kind of like our tie legitimacy. Not to say that the Rockies aren't a legitimate organization or whatever, but people want to, you know, complain about Coors Field and how big of a hitter's park it is and laugh at the Rockies and say, well, they, you know, all their hitters are just Coors Field creations. They can't hit anywhere else but Coors Field. And, you know, it's kind of turning out to be the truth a little bit this season, but... you know, just never taken as a serious ball club until Ubaldo came along and started doing the things that he's been doing over the last several years.
Yeah, he certainly had a profound impact on the image of pitching as it relates to our team, and particularly as it relates to Coors Field. I mean, I'm not going to say he single-handedly changed the paradigm there, but I think that there was certainly an effect that third parties were a little bit less skeptical about the ability for pitching to be developed here. And perhaps most importantly, it was a bit of a confidence builder for some of the pitchers who might have been already in the organization or just joining it, that this might not have been as much of a challenge as expected. Of course, we're in the middle of a drought right now of a little bit of several drafts worth of failed pitching prospects that have dealt with a whole variety of problems.
That's a little early to say several drafts with the failed pitching problems. We have two, Casey Weathers and Greg Reynolds. The jury's still completely out on Friedrich Matzek.
Well, I shouldn't say failed, but perhaps much less impact than expected from the 06 through 09 drafts. That certainly wasn't meant to be a... me giving up on those points there. And I mean, I would say that with Greg Reynolds, he's obviously running out of time to get anything done, but even with Weathers, he's still got a lot of, room for development, at least contract time. I guess what I'm saying is, you know, the guys we got like Alex White and Drew Pomeranz, we didn't get any guys like that in that period of time. Which was obviously the primary reason why such a trade was allowed to go down.
Well, the Rockies have never gotten guys like that, though. They always kind of go out. I mean, at least in the last decade or so, they've always gone after the saver pick, the guy who's going to be the surefire. There's no question about it. This guy's going to be good. They or maybe not great, but good. Mm-hmm. And rather than going for the guy, this guy might be great, and you might flame out. They don't. You know, they've shied away from riskier, higher upside guys and gone with safer, low ups or lower upside guys to fill out their top draft choices. And well, it hasn't really panned out. Ian Stewart's kind of a flop, depending on how you look at it. Jeff Francis isn't with the Rockies anymore, which isn't really his fault. Obviously, it's not his fault he's getting hurt, but he was nothing that special. He was good, but not great. Again, he. You know, Reynolds and Casey Weathers, we just mentioned. Weathers probably will never reach the majors at this point, and Reynolds may be done with the Rockies after this season. We'll see if there's any value left in him. Christian Frieder got hurt in Double A. Or was it High A ball that he got hurt?
He struggled with injury last year at Double A.
Okay, so it was Tulsa. Yeah, I wasn't sure it was Modesto or Tulsa, but no, it's... We still have yet to see if Frieder turns out a major league return. And same thing with Matzik, and his recent developments have been very promising, but still far away. So it's not entirely unfair to say that it hasn't been, you know, the draft hasn't been the greatest thing in the world for the Rockies.
Right.
The Latin scouting has been great, but yeah, it has to do with this kind of guys we get. Everybody says, well, this guy is a good pick at number 21 or whatever. And then he kind of turns out to be this boring kind of player, and everyone's like, what happened? That's what we drafted. Didn't you realize what we drafted?
Right.
People think the top prospects automatically mean amazing pitch out of your mind.
Future aces always, yeah. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, when we got Jason Hirsch, I mean, Jason Hirsch was Houston's top pitching prospect, and if he had really peaked out, he might have been a number two, maybe. He was more suited like kind of, you know, mid-level number three, and that was his ceiling. And, you know, so just, I'm not trying to harp on Hershey, that's just who he was, but top prospect, my point is, can be a misleading title.
Mm-hmm.
But as for the return they got, I mean, it's a good baseball return. I mean, Drew Pomerantz could be as good, if not better, than Ubaldo.
Right.
Alex White won't be, but he could be, I mean, he should slot in as a number two, number three style pitcher, should everything go well with his recovery and so on and so forth. And Garland, one of the other guys we got, he's Aaron Cook again.
Gardner, yeah.
Gardner, thank you. Why do I say Garland? Gardner, yes. Joe Gardner.
Although it sounds like the team is considering putting him into relief.
I don't get that. Let's not ruin a guy in relief until we have to. Holy smokes.
Yeah, that did seem a little premature to me as well. I'm no expert on player development, but I would think that at this point, I mean, it's not like there's a whole lot of starters at Tulsa, and even once we get Pomeranz and White set up, I mean, it's not an issue of depth. There's no real reason to push him out in favor of other players at this point, with the only exception being the fact that the team itself seems to be under the impression that they want to take him this direction. I wonder if they'll at least let him start through the rest of this season and maybe see if that changes, because if you look at his history, he's never appeared in a relief appearance in the minors once in his entire professional career. And that's pretty hard to do, actually, because in the early levels, a lot of players get experience both as a starter and a reliever. We see it right now in both Casper and Tri-City. We see a lot of the people who are intended to be starters coming in relief for like two or three innings, because they have so many prospects they can't, or I prospect, not necessarily, but so many players that are potential future starters that they can't really go on a regular rotation, so they have to kind of flip players back and forth between relief and starting.
We'll have to see what happens, obviously, but if Gardner was the number seven prospect in Cleveland's organization,
mm-hmm.
I figure we ought to give him a shot. Isn't there some schlub in Double A that we can drop out of the rotation? I mean, no offense to everyone in Tulsa, cry your bleeding hearts out because they call you schlubs. There's got to be someone in Double A who's not Friedrich, who's expendable as far as being in the rotation.
Well,
there's just no good reason to you know, let organizational guys hold a starting spot when we have guys like Garland who could be major league impact, maybe not impact guys, but major league pitchers in a rotation. And
the guy who fits that bill is Josh Sullivan, but he's already sort of only like half a double A starter anyway, because he like once a month or so is taken off the roster for a couple weeks so other people can get starts.
Ever since he jumped up above the Tri-City Dust Devils, he's been, I mean, even 2010 he pitched with Tri-City still for five starts, but he has an ERA of roughly six above A-ball.
Mm-hmm.
Where's Modesto in here? Oh no, it's Asheville. In 2007, he pitched 50 innings in Asheville with a 3.26 ERA. 2008, pitched all of 10 innings in Tri-City, and then he was out 2009. I'm assuming there's an injury there that I'm forgetting about.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what the injury was, but that's basically been his history over the past few years, is the injury and then recovering from it.
Exactly. In 2010, he pitched, again, all of 50 innings. And 2011 in Tulsa, he's actually had a relatively full workload, 16 starts, 3 relief appearances for 90 innings, but he has a 6.48 ERA in a pitcher's league, and he's 26.
He's actually 27 now.
Oh, is he? Do you have a birthday?
He shows up on Rocky's roster. It's
yep,
27.
July 5th.
So,
yeah. He just turned 27. This is his age 26 season then, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And he was a 2005 draftee, which means he's part of the class that's going to be leaving the organization at the end of the season anyway. So I would say that the team is probably not letting him hold anybody back. They're not going to get rid of Friedrich, obviously. He's not on the roster right now, Friedrich. He was just put on the inactive list today. But he's obviously still part of the potential long-term plans. I don't see them, ditching Dan Houston either.
Right now, they've told us, as far as, you know, the top four pitchers by starts, you got Corey Riordan, Christian Friedrich, Rob Scahill.
And then
Sullivan, Dan Houston.
Okay.
And Juan Nicasio was, you know, fifth with nine starts, but he's obviously busy right now.
Yes.
So someone's got to be able to drop out of that rotation slot. Dan Houston he's the kind of guy you want to keep in there, because Matt's been has dubbed him Alan Johnson 2.0.
He's very similar. He's got a little bit different stuff, but he's kind of on the same career path, basically.
I think my point stands, though.
Yes.
The point of, we have a rotation slot in Tulsa. Josh Sullivan, you know, I'm sorry he's had an injured career and stuff like that. He does not belong in the Texas or the Tulsa Drillers rotation anymore, whereas Gardner does, and he needs to be in that rotation slot. And I don't know. He hasn't had the most impressive year, but he struggled coming into this season, Gardner. And I love how we're spending all this time talking about the third best guy in the trade. Trying to pull up Baseball Reference, and it doesn't seem to...
The trade deadline probably crashed it.
Okay, Joseph. I was looking up Joe Gardner, and it's like, this guy pitched in 1948. I'm like, that's not the guy I'm looking for. And he's been relatively solid before up through A-plus ball. He had a 2.65 ERA and 22 starts last year in Kinston in the Carolina League. His jump up to Akron's been much less successful with a... You know, he's made 19 starts with a 4.99 ERA and 97 innings pitched. His strikeout numbers have plummeted. But, I mean, he's 23, so yeah, I can see where they're saying we gotta do something with this guy relatively fast, lest he just flame out. But, I don't know, I'm a favor of getting guys who have any kind of rotation potential as much time in the rotation as possible.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that at this point, that it's probably a better, long-term move to keep him starting for the time being. But, you know, we don't know exactly what's going to happen yet. The trade did go through officially, which means Gardner is officially a Tulsa Driller, but he's on their reserve list right now, at least until he shows up. Also Matt McBride, the position player we got in the deal, is going to be headed to Tulsa. We'll have a better idea of what the team intends to do with Gardner once we see the corresponding move when he's activated. I would assume they're going to put Sullivan back on the inactive list. You said that he's fourth or fifth in terms of starts made, but he's never he's not really had a chance to be a full starter because he's been the guy who all season, whenever a pitcher needs to be swapped in and out, he's always been the one who has fallen victim to that rotation thievery, if you will. And for example, he was the one who lost his rotation spot when Esmel Rogers was doing his rehab, and so on and so forth.
With only missed 3 starts in that too. I mean, yeah, you're right. He seems to be the goat as far as your rotation slots needed now, but still he's made 16 starts out of 19 appearances. It's not as if he's, half and half.
Well, you said Riordan leads the organization. How many starts has he gotten this year?
21 for Riordan, 20 for Friedrich, 20 for Scahill, and 16 for Sullivan.
So, including you basically Sullivan has missed about a quarter of the year out of the rotation. I'd say that's pretty significant.
A quarter?
Yeah, if he has 16 starts and
there's 19 appearances, so yeah, if we're looking at 19 appearances, we're saying
if he's pitching out of the bullpen, he's not in the rotation.
Yeah.
So the point being, he has spent a quarter of the year out of the Tulsa rotation. I think that's pretty significant. Point being, I don't think the team is going to hold off on Gardner being a starter because of Sullivan. I don't think you have to worry about that. I think he's already a fringe starter to begin with.
Gardner?
No, Sullivan.
Oh.
you really are a little bit out of it.
Well, we keep using words like him. It's tough to kind of keep track of context when we're jumping back and forth. Anyways, no, Sullivan needs to stay a starter. Or Sullivan needs to be demoted or bumped from the rotation entirely or whatever. Gardner needs to be starting. The ultimate point of all of the articles that I was writing about is that the Rockies are in a tough place as far as organizational depth goes. And I think this, Tulsa thing here just kind of explains it, that we're concerned about a couple filler guys, being in the way of better starters taking their spots. And that's not really, a good thing. That's something we want to, we would rather have it be pretty obvious who the starters are because they're all the top-notch guys who, everyone watch out. These guys are on the fast track to the majors, so on and so forth. And, we just don't have a lot of guys coming up that are really that exciting. I mean, Friedrich could be interesting. Nicasio's Willian Rosario is pretty exciting. I should, not sell him too short here, but We're not talking about, the next Tim Lincecum. We're not talking about, Clayton Kershaw or something like that. We didn't up till just recently have someone like that to be all excited about.
Mm-hmm.
And then add that in with the organization's struggles this year. And I mean, every team in the entire organization, except for perhaps Tri-City, I haven't looked at their record since last time I wrote a Pebble report, seems to be losing.
Yeah, Tri-City, despite being relatively thin on actual MLB projected prospects, is actually having an incredibly successful season. They've done very well, and they have a lot of players who weren't really on the radar going in, getting a chance to make a case for Asheville next season. So I don't know the record offhand, but I know that they've been performing better than most of the other organizational teams. But as we always say, much like spring training, you can't really put a lot of stock or weight into the record of a minor league team.
Not too much, but it's something to be noted that our talent against their talent. I mean, it's obviously a lot of organizational different phases, because some teams are in a losing spell right now, but they have a lot of talent on the way up, and some teams aren't that. Some teams are trying to get as far as they can with the talent they have right now, whereas if you look, I mean, the Rockies, for example, all the hotshot talent is up now, and they're not really getting the job done, so this kind of forces the Rockies to make some unpleasant decisions. Because what's the next step? What's the next thing to go for the Rockies? Who's the next player to come up and make a difference? Well, possibly Rosario, but catching's not great. but it's not the black hole that third base and second base are.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's kind of like looking at right field and looking at catcher. Neither Seth Smith nor Iannetta are really blowing anyone's skirt up. They're not that exciting as far as baseball players go, but they're also not bad. They're average-ish, you know, depending on how you want to look at them. So just saying that, it's all good and fine if those are the only two holes you have, you know, a couple average-ish guys. But we have two other spots that are, you know, drastically bad. I should actually throw center field in that mix of the average-ish as well, because, you know, Fowler's been hitting the ball relatively well lately, but over his career he's been average, you know, good fielder, despite what UZR says. I still want to get in touch with the makers of UZR and say, dude, what the hell? But, you know, factor that in with the fact that he's, you know, roughly an average bat, and, well, it's a lot of average, and I think Dan O'Dowd put it quite well during the broadcast on the phone with Drew and George today. He essentially said that there are three types of baseball players. They are survivors, they are contributors, and there are winners. And this team has way too many survivors that are not moving toward being contributors and not nearly enough winners. And, you know, so I tweeted that, and I was like, that's an interesting point, and blah, blah, blah. And someone comes back and go, players can't be winners. Teams are winners. Okay, yeah, I get it. I would agree with that sentiment, because I do think trying to pigeonhole players as winners or losers is a bit, well, silly, for lack of a better way to put it, because it is a team effort. But the point stands, we only have how many guys who are really, you know, championship caliber players? Not too many. And, you know, something's going to have to change there, because Todd Helton isn't going to stay this productive for very much longer at all. We can only hope that Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez don't have down starts this season. Well, I guess Tulo had a great start to the season, but hit the skids pretty hard in May. But, you know, we got to have consistent production out of all spots in the lineup. And really the only two or three guys we could count on for that, they didn't even do it. And this isn't to say that they're, you know, washed up deadbeat players and that, oh my gosh, we spent all this money on, you know, guys who are terrible. That's not the case at all. It's more the issue of who's supporting them if they aren't playing at all-star level at that exact moment. And the answer to that question is pretty much nobody. Stewart had this just ungodly bad season. Smith had a good year, and Helton had a good year, but past that, it's kind of, there's just no one there to really help things out. So now you say, okay, well, what do we do to fix it? You gotta get new players. How do you do that? Well, you either sign them in free agency, you draft them and bring them up from the minors, or you trade them and get new ones. And, well, we know the team's philosophies toward free agency are typically find the bargain, do your best, and hope for the best results possible, rather than going after the big names. So there's not gonna be too much help coming in free agency as far as top-of-the-line players go. And the next thought would be promote them from inside, which is what we've been doing. But who's the next guy up again? Like I said, there's no one really beating down the door. And the next closest guy is Will Rosario. After him, probably Friedrich. And then you got a few other heres and theres, like I guess like Thomas Field or... Mm-hmm. You know, just people have been kind of pushing the envelope a bit. And some of the AAA depth guys we have. But, you know, I guess Nolan Arenado could be kind of thrust into that as well, but... You know, he's no sure thing. He's very young, and he's in the California League. And he's doing well for the California League, don't get me wrong. And he's gotten better every single month that goes by. But again, we're not talking about a guy who's going to come up within the next year and severely impact the team.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of stuck here. We have to acquire more players or just kind of muddle in mediocrity. And the organization just made it very clear. Muddle in mediocrity is not an acceptable outcome. And so... You gotta think about who's available then to trade away. Well, Helton's obviously not gonna trade. I mean, I remember coming in and saying the Rockies need to trade everyone not named Tulo, Cargo, or Ubaldo, and Matt goes, Helton? I'm like,
yeah.
No. Helton's like part of the field.
We mentioned this. Todd Helton. We mentioned this on last week's show, yeah.
Perfect. There we go.
I think really the way this ended up for us was sort of described very accurately by what you said before, that, the reason Jimenez was placed on the table was, the other guys don't have the value, to net that the a kind of talent that is a tier above that sort of mid-grade B minus C plus talent depth that we already have, and which I think is precisely why we ended up only making the one move. Go ahead.
So again, baseball speaking, I mean, this move wasn't a bad move. Getting, it stinks moving a guy like Ubaldo, but let's think about this as pragmatically as humanly possible. We've got a guy who has lost a few miles off his fastball this year, and so we all tried to, you know, pick ourselves up by saying, oh, well, if any pitcher can figure his way out of this, it'll be Ubaldo Jimenez, because, you know, he's been really good since, I think it was, you know, mid-May. And yeah, he's had a couple stinkers here and there, but it hasn't been just consistently bad like it was to start the season. So we're all talking ourselves into, oh, well, he's coming back and he's gonna be fine, and he's a mental block, whatever. What if it never gets better? No one ever stopped and really said that. I mean, I'm sure people said things in the comments as a counterpoint to people saying, well, what if the prospect sucks? What if the prospect gets hurt? Yeah, what if Ubaldo gets hurt? What if Ubaldo sucks? No one seems to be taking that into consideration. And we sold very high on him, despite the low point in his career that he is at right now. We sold really high and got a sell high return out of this. In four players, I mean, really three players and one throw-in. When, you know, sorry, Matt, but yeah.
We just needed a Matt quota for the trade.
Yeah, seriously. But I think that's kind of just the point there, though, that mediocrity has prices, and underperforming has prices, and the Rockies basically were saying, we're not going to put up with a mediocre ball club. There's no way they're done dealing either. They might be able to make a couple deadline post deadline deals.
Yeah, like exactly. Cook, Giambi, people who are going to clear waivers of that variety.
People who are owed money and can't just be like plucked easily. That might still happen. But I also wouldn't be surprised if nothing else happened the rest of this season and everyone is traded during the offseason.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I think when you look at the position of how full the roster is at this point, and as I've mentioned many times on the show and on the blog, how few of them are actually in line to leave on their own, they're going to need to pull some strings and make some decisions regarding a lot of these fringe players on the roster. And ironically, we might actually see a much larger roster shift between years this season, despite the fact that that wouldn't have actually happened at all had we been performing up to the expectations. If this team were doing better, we would probably see a very similar team on the field next season. In this case, it looks like we might be, kind of having the exact opposite, happen. We might be, more inspired to get rid of some of these players who, we have to be the ones to pull the trigger on those moves rather than, just kind of let the, natural contractual flow take its course, if that makes sense.
There's a lot of tough moves that you gotta make when the team just isn't getting the job done, cause I'm sad and glad at the same time. I am sad that it took the team, it took Ubaldo Jimenez being traded to basically be the final message of, look, this is not good enough. We gotta start thinking long term about this nonsense. Mm-hmm. And it just stinks that such a, you don't think about Ubaldo as just being another one of the players, because he's such a, you know, he bled for this team, you know what I mean? He loved it here. He happily would have stayed here forever. He's such a simple guy in a good way. And, you know, it just kind of feels like we had to, like, trade away this favorite prize, this, you know, golden boy of the entire organization. And, you know, say what you will about Tulowitzki, you know, everyone loves Ubaldo. And, yeah, it sucks. It just sucks. But it's good that the organization's saying things aren't working. Time to shake them up. And, yeah, people are going to be very upset about how the team isn't treating players as commodities and so on and so forth, but, you know, sometimes you gotta. And you know, the one frustration I have is I feel like they talked themselves into this trade, and then they didn't make, I guess, two frustrations that kind of tie together. They said, well, Ubaldo might be available if we get just absolutely destroyed in this, like, you know, not destroyed, but if we destroy the other team in the trade, if we just get blown over by the offer, that it's like, whoa, how can you say no to that offer? That's insane. that's the kind of thing they were looking for. And in a sense, they did get a very good offer on a guy who might be on the decline right now. Not saying necessarily he is, and I hope he's not, because I don't have anything against Cleveland and I love the guy. But I was hoping for Chisenhall or Kipnis coming from Cleveland, and so that we could fill one of our holes here, that we could say, all right, we got Pomerantz and White and Lonnie Chisenhall. That would have been an insane return, just an insane return, and it would have still been frustrating, but at the same time, it would have been difficult to not be, you know, to not say, wow, we got a good return on that deal. And they got a good return out of it was, but I guess sentimentally, I wanted them, you know, to really, if you want Ubaldo Jimenez from us, you're going to have to feel it. You're going to feel the weight of this trade. And they didn't address the needs, and then they didn't go and trade anyone else either. I get that Ty Wigginton is on a 2-year contract and it's kind of harder to trade, but with a guy like Wigginton, you just take someone taking his contract, really.
Well, that's kind of what I was speaking to before, when I was saying that you, I think, summed it up pretty well last week, when you said that there just, is not a lot of value elsewhere on the team. And so I think that, your opinion at this point is obviously they should have just traded him for just about anything they could get. But I get the impression that, they were looking to trade in order to improve rather than just stay level. And, that's why ultimately no other moves ended up getting made.
Well, what kills me here is that they're not, I don't care if they say we're definitely not giving up on this. Yeah, you've given up on this season. You just traded a ball to Jimenez. You just told us the season's over. Don't try to pretend. I mean, yeah, Alex White is not going to match Ubaldo's production the rest of the way. I'm, this is the pragmatic. Yeah, he could, and upside, and you don't know the future and stuff like that. Yeah, I get it. But, I mean, and I'm excited about Alex White. He's just not going to be a surefire ace because that's not the guy he is. So, that being said, why did we limit ourselves to moving only Ubaldo Jimenez when we had lots of other eligible guys to move off this club? And it was, what exactly is Wigginton going to gain the team going forward? Not that he's a bad guy or he's not a good team player or whatever, and the team's been wanting him for a while, but with him there, oh gosh, now we got to think about what we're going to do with Ian Stewart.
Well, it makes you wonder if, I mean, we didn't hear a lot about Wigginton at all during the actual final hours of the deadline, and all the attention was on Stewart instead.
We heard about Ioneta as well.
Well, I meant between the third base people. Specifically because the biggest bonus to moving Wigginton would hypothetically have been the chance to play Stewart and let him sink or swim for the rest of the season. And so it kind of makes you wonder if they looked at Wigginton first, didn't get any bites, and then tried to get Stewart done instead at the last minute, and then they both ended up staying here anyway. So,
well, I'm just wondering if they asked too much for him, or they basically said, we think that we're going to, they like forecasted a rebound, the other team wasn't buying a forecasted rebound, they wanted to see production, they're doing a show me the money kind of thing, and yeah, I mean, Stewart's got us in a nasty place as well, because I still fight for the guy's upside, because I think he still has some awesome upside. But, you know, I forgot how the phrasing goes. Is that and the something will cost you whatever. It's a sack full of dignity is worth a sack. A sack full of Ian Stewart's potential upside and rebound is worth a sack. And, I mean, the only hope we have for getting anything out of Ian Stewart at this point here is if he either rebounds very strongly, so I guess we have two hopes. He either rebounds strongly for the last 2 months of the 2011 season, or we end up bouncing him like Jose Lopez next year to someone saying, we'll trade you this quadruple-A guy for Ian Stewart's potential upside. And it really stinks to give up on a first-round guy like that, but, you know, he hasn't really left us many options. The fact that we needed to go out and get Wigginton, it speaks a lot to the way this season's gone so far, for lack of a better phrasing. And it's been disappointing. It's a team that prides itself on its own of playing its own guys, and they're going to live and die and sink and swim by their own guys, and they have sunk. And it's all, I mean, I don't like Jim Tracy, but I'm not about to blame him for the season. I think that his job's definitely in jeopardy, and we can talk about that another time if you want, but you know, there's not like one thing that's gone wrong for this team. It's not, oh, well, the pitching didn't pitch enough. Oh, well, the hitting didn't hit enough. Oh, well, the manager made stupid decisions. it's all those things, all rolled into one nasty bundle, and we get to put up with it for the rest of the season and for the foreseeable future. So I guess the good side is that even though it sucks losing a guy that we all love like Ubaldo Jimenez, we got a good pitching return out of him. And I still kind of question the timing and the necessity. But what's done is done, and I guess I could sit here and whine about it for a while longer, but that's not really going to get us anywhere. And, you know, Godspeed, Ubaldo. Do well in Cleveland. Maybe we'll see you back here in free agency.
That would be interesting.
I don't think it'd be unheard of because he does like it here.
And it depends on how he does between the next couple of sessions there. What happened there?
You see, my headphones are only so long while I'm putting away laundry, and
oh, okay.
You stretch too far and they bounce off your head.
Well, on that note, we're at about 55 minutes already. So if I want to have any sort of practical ability to upload this thing, we should probably get going. So unless you have any final thoughts on the deadline or any other so forth, I think...
Final thought, I guess I'm just glad it's over and I wish they'd done more.
Okay.
That's the final thought there. Mm-hmm. So that's all I got this week.
All right. Well, then we should be back in a week or somewhere close to a week. Again, I'm not guaranteeing any of these next couple episodes up in a timely manner. Going to do my best, but we don't get paid to do this. So it goes as quickly as is convenient rather than is prioritized. So anyway, we'll be back sometime the week of August 8th. And until then, I'll see you next time. Take care.